Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Temporary Admission. Now, with the highly anticipated Marina Abramović exhibition, Gates and Portals, due to open at Modern Art Oxford later this week, in today's episode, we're going to be joined by the exhibition's curator, Emma Ridgway. Stepping inside the world of Marina Abramović, we'll find out a little bit more about her and what to expect from the exhibition that promises a somewhat different style of exhibition, with each visitor participating as a performer. Now, Emma, firstly, welcome to Temporary Admission.
Hello, James, and thanks so much for inviting me to speak with you today.
My pleasure. But look, Emma, before we delve a little bit deeper into the exhibition itself, do you want to kick things off and tell us a little bit more about you and what it was that led you to curate the exhibition at Modern Art Oxford?
Yeah, so I'm a curator and have worked for about 20 years or so, curating quite ambitious projects in range of different interesting institutions and places. So that's exhibition curating and creative learning as well, public programmes, publications. And I've done that at the Serpentine Gallery and Reykjavik Art Museum, a big experimental project there that Marina Abramović was involved with actually. And Kudge in New Delhi and the Royal Society of Arts in London and Barbican Centre as well. And I just this year been the curator of the British Pavilion as well at the Venice Biennale. And the artist Sonia Boyce and I were awarded the Golden Lion, in fact, for the best national exhibition at the Venice Biennale this year. And I work at Modern Art Oxford too. I've been there since 2015.
Wow, very busy.
Well, I didn't do all those things all at once, but yeah. At Modern Art Oxford, I'm the chief curator and head of exhibitions and learning. So about 5 years or so ago, I was tasked with devising the creative direction for the artistic programme of exhibitions and learning, and a new local strategy as well for creative learning, which is really flourishing now, which we're delighted with. And my role is to initiate and lead on a majority of the main exhibitions and publications that we do there. And I also do talks and events about contemporary art and artists, and I lead the curatorial team across exhibitions and creative learning and digital projects.
Fantastic. Well, look, Emma, I think a lot of our listeners who are based in the UK might have already visited Modern Oxford before, but for those that aren't based in the UK or that haven't had the chance to visit the space for themselves just yet, could you tell us a little bit more about Modern Oxford and what it actually is?
Yeah, so Modern Oxford, it's a public institution, so it's a charity, and it's one of the UK's, say, one of the leading contemporary art spaces, and it's known for its kind of interesting artistic programme, and it's very committed to education and internationalism, and also has a history of really thinking about relationship of social justice and social change very much through art and working with artists. So it's a modest size art institution. It's fairly influential, the artistic programme, and it has been actually for over 50 years. So it was set up in 1965 to show kind of the new type of art that was being made, conceptual work, and that included, of course, even as far back as that time, very much participatory work and performance art. And the space, in terms of its artistic programming then, was really pioneering also in encouraging artists to try new mediums like video kind of at certain periods as well. So it's been really leading in quite a number of ways at different moments through its history, including showing artists, contemporary artists from China and Russia and India for the first time very much in the UK. So it's done, you know, it being the group of people who are working there at any one time. So it's done really interesting stuff. And it builds a reputation as well for artistic programming that's kind of politically switched on and showing really new, unexpected work. And, you know, over the time, that's been more in out of focus. And more recently, people have commented that the curatorial direction at the moment, it's got that distinctive programming quality kind of back, and it's has a form of inclusivity that's really fresh as well, which is great.
And obviously this week specifically is very exciting for everyone at Modern Oxford, because the Marina Abramovich exhibition Gates and Portals is finally about to open, which is fantastic news. But Marina Abramovich has been on probably all of our radars for a long time now, but I don't actually know too much about her as a person, and also her practice. Maybe only more recently have I been kind of growing fan of Abramovich's work. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about Marina Abramovich and who she is as a person and what kind of art it is that she produces?
Yep. So Marina Abramovich is an amazing person. That's the first and foremost thing I'd say. And she has a really phenomenal creative courage. So she's a pioneer in performance art. That's what she's best known for. And she started practicing that really in the early 1970s. So she was born in 1946 in the then Yugoslavia. She had quite a tumultuous childhood upbringing, being a very complex family. And at a time when there was obviously communist rule, but also lots of different factions and belief systems going on literally within her household and more broadly. She went to art school. She trained at an academy and initially as a painter. And then things changed in 1968, internationally across many different countries. And one of the things that happened where she was that there was a space set up, an institution, which was new, called the Student Cultural Centre. It was kind of based on places like the ICA in London, and Mama Oxford was kind of part of that form of institution too, where the work that would be shown would be conceptual and performance-based. So she saw her first performance work about 1971 and then started contributing her work as a student to be performative and conceptual from that point on too. So what's really striking about Marina Abramovich's work, and one of the things she's known for, is how physically brave her work often is. It's often orientated around endurance as an important act, no matter how challenging that becomes physically, because ultimately what's really going on within Marina Abramovich's work is her fascination with what is and what the present can be, and how one can really become utterly focused on the present moment in time within one's own body, and how that can actually take you into different forms of consciousness, obviously completely away from self-consciousness, but into a kind of self-awareness that connects you into much bigger energies in the world. So her influences are fascinating. She kind of, for over long periods of time, really, she's drawn on many, many different influences as regards forms of spirituality that also have these ideas at their core around ideas of ritual and endurance as a way to use the body as something that's not an egoed place, but is instead a state that we are within, a house, she might call it, that we're within, that we can become attuned to a very present moment with each other and with other aspects of the material world and, of course, beyond. So her work's very meditative in some ways, but also very energetic, because the subject of her work, really from the earliest point, has been really influenced by her own experiences. So her own experiences in the Balkans, as she'd refer to it, her own experiences of the challenges of war, the difficult, complex situations of growing up in a communist country as a young person, and also forms of inner conflict that then also get worked out and react in relation to external political conflicts.
And I think, like you say, what's interesting is that Marina's work spans across so many different practices, whether that be physical works, performance, etc. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about that and how they kind of interplay and when it is Marina, you know, produces performance art versus physical, even if there is a circumstance in which, you know, it makes a difference? Can you shed some light on that for us?
Marina's got her performance works that she has, and she also uses objects in really interesting ways. And she's actually had objects in her practice right from the very beginning. Her first work that was conceptual involved a shell with a peanut in it that she nailed to a wall. That was in 1971. She's best known for performance work, but her object I find really mesmerising and intriguing too. They invite us into a relationship that's kind of part performative. She has objects that she's been working with kind of since the 80s, really started working with them more seriously. And then in 1995, an exhibition at MoMA Oxford, in fact, curated by Chrissy Isles, she brought more of this practice into her work. So she has objects that she calls transitional objects or transitory objects. And they are often made from fascinating materials that she is very drawn to because of the qualities she feels they have, where they are able to conduct energy and convey energy to us, essentially. So quartz crystal, different forms of quartz crystals fascinate her. She has some two objects that are huge quartz crystals that are called shoes for departure, that are, they're set still on the ground. The idea is that we as a visitor, or Marina as the performer, can put your feet within these crystal shoes, and you're physically held, of course, in physical time and space. But her idea is that through that, and through really engaging with the crystal energy, you're actually able to mentally go into a different place so that you can acquire a level of kind of inner peace and transition. So these are objects that she feels help transition us from one state of consciousness, so maybe a kind of workaday, daily conscious awareness, into another plane that's more switched on, that's more open, that's more engaged with the world in different ways. And I find those fascinating. I remember being at the Venice Biennale years ago, and there was a group exhibition, had lots and lots of work in, but as I was on my way into somewhere, it wasn't within the main exhibition, this work, there were some of her crystal pieces that were very polished, and they are set into either a wall or a stand, and they align with different parts of your body, kind of your head or your groin or different areas, and you literally just rest against them and have this kind of meditative exchange with them. And at that moment, that was exactly what I needed in that space. It's a kind of beautiful mix of being very grounded and at the same time engaging with ideas, which are, of course, spiritual and somewhat playful, necessarily, all these things. And just the idea of getting very much back to a more centered place of being part of the earth. When she and I were chatting, actually, she was saying, I was asking her about some of the materials she's using in the exhibition in Oxford. And she was saying that one of the huge performance pieces that she's best known for was in 1988, and it was with her fellow performer, Ulai. And they walked the Great Wall of China, both starting at separate ends of it. So this was a phenomenally, phenomenally physically demanding endurance piece. And she said she was, of course, incredibly aware of what her feet were stepping on all the time, because that's what she's looking at for weeks, months, and that the different stones and the different aspects of the different stones and the minerals and the qualities within those became increasingly fascinating to her on that walk, which is one of the things that really sparked her interest in thinking about how we absorb different energies from different material things.
It's quite interesting as well, though, how many of her works seem to follow a similar thread or have a similar theme. And again, as well, a lot of the works are also quite politically charged.
Absolutely. Marina Abramovic's work often have connections over different periods of time and different relationships. So the exhibition at Modern Oxford actually came about because she had a major solo exhibition in 1995 at Modern Oxford that was important for her practice. It was important for more broader understanding of performance work. It was called Objects, Performance, Video and Sound, curated by Chrissy Isles, who had a really great understanding of performance work. And as part of that, Marina spent some time doing an artist residency at the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford, which is an incredible collection that is really, I don't know what to say, it's infamous, it's notorious, it's extraordinary, and there's not really other collections like it. It has within it an amazing array of different cultural artifacts from around the world. They are currently doing incredible research and duty of care to those objects and the communities they originally came from. In 1995, Marina spent time in the museum and noticing objects that she felt had interesting energy, such as objects, one that was said to be owned by a witch. She also did a piece where she took a skeleton that looks extremely like a human, is a human skeleton, I think perhaps a model, and she scrubs and scrubs and scrubs it. And this was made into a video work called Cleaning the House. And the video works were shown at Modern Art Oxford of her interaction with these incredible artifacts from the Pitt Rivers Museum. So last summer, as an artist who is wildly busy and always doing shows, because she's since, and more recently, as you may know, she's been doing amazing, incredible operas, like a homage to Maria Callas' work, which I love, and really amazing big range of practices that she does. She's an educator. She has the Marina Abramović method we can talk about in a minute. And what she doesn't feel she has so much time for is that immersion into research that actually when artists have perhaps less fame, more time, you're actually able to do those residencies again. So she came back to Oxford to work again with Museum of Modern Art Oxford and did a residency with the Pitt Rivers Museum. And there, some brilliant researchers, including Claire Harris, who's an expert on Tibetan Buddhism, and others, spent time with her. And the residency was organised by my co-curator on this show, Amy Budd, and our assistant curator, Jessie Robinson. And it was a really incredibly productive time for Marina. She did drawings just by what she was drawn to within this incredible museum space. One item that she was drawn to that she didn't know what it was at the time was this beautiful big, it looks quite softly carved, but maybe worn down over time, stone sculpture, quite rounded, that looks kind of like a figure, but it doesn't look that human. And it turned out to be a baba, which is from Ukrainian cultural heritage, and it is a spiritual, kind of almost like totem. And she felt, she noticed this thing because she just really felt as she moved by it, not all these things are labelled so easily that you can tell where they are, what they are as you're looking. And she felt extremely drawn to that. And when she and I were looking through her drawings and different things she'd made at the end of her residency, I asked her about the Cyrillic writing that was on these very simple pencil drawings. And she said she was surprised by that too. And actually there was something about how she'd experienced the interactions in the space, this is August 2021, that she just felt prompted to write in Cyrillic for the first time in an incredibly long time. So for her, it was a real deep dive into different encounters in that space. And again, she brought together objects that she found fascinating, like something that was called the witch's ladder. It looks like this strange kind of twisted rope with feathers and all sorts of fascinating little amulets and things woven into it. I think it's actually from somewhere such as Somerset. It's an English artifact that has reputations around spiritualism and all this folkloric aspect around it. And then these other aspects, which it could have been a bird scarer. So it kind of in itself as an object is fascinating in the kind of different multiple interpretations that there have been of it over time. And as she did in 95, she just spent time holding her hand over the object to really absorb the energy and pay attention. And that paying close attention to things, I think, is really central to understanding her work, to engaging with her work and to enjoying it, and will be a big part of the exhibition at Modern Art Oxford.
You've mentioned, you know, a few of her works there, but there's some of her works that I think people will have seen or that have maybe got more importance than others. I'm thinking now of the Great Wall of China, and she did one where I think Naomi Campbell turned up and sat staring at Marina Abramović while she was performing, I guess. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about maybe a few of Marina Abramović's kind of key historical works that have maybe formed more of a presence over her, the span of her practice than others?
When I mentioned that she was creatively courageous, she did extraordinary things when she was doing her early performance works in the 70s, and it set her off on a trajectory where she stayed incredibly adventurous. So she had a series of works called rhythm pieces, for example, one of which, by way of example, was that she, at the Student Cultural Centre, yes, KC, she lay within a burning star, and she was standing for as long as she could endure. What she hadn't anticipated in this duration, early duration work, was that actually the fire would, of course, use the oxygen that surrounded her. So one of the unanticipated things was she collapsed due to lack of oxygen. And initially people thought it was the performance and then realised it wasn't. So then she was whisked off for medical attention. She's been extraordinary. There's another piece that is very well known, and you can see in photographic works, and it's interesting hearing her talk about it and reflect on it now. It's 1974. So she had a piece where she laid out different tools and objects, some kind, and mainly tools that could have done damage to her. One was a pistol. Both her parents had loaded guns by their bed at night. Such was the era and the level of conflict that they had grown up in. In her performance, one of the things was a gun with a bullet next to it. There was knives. There was all sorts of different tools. And she put a notice explaining that for the time of the performance, which was 6 hours, she was an object and people could do to her as they wished, and she would take responsibility. And for her, it was an exploration into human behaviour. When I was talking to her about it at one point, she mentioned that she hadn't expected some of the cruelty that people had in how they responded, which must have been a very traumatic, shocking thing to happen.
Yeah, that sounds quite terrifying, actually.
Yeah, as you'll see from the images, one of the things that happened was her top was taken off people, her skin was cut, one person forced the bullet into the gun and then forced their gun into her hand. I mean, really extremely aggressive behaviour, not from everybody. She said quite a number of the women and quite a number of people did kinder acts, but the level of vulnerability she hadn't fully anticipated. And that form of endurance, that is that kind of phenomenal stoic behaviour to get through to the end of it, is something that's continued to characterise her practice.
Yeah, like we said, that's kind of one of the recurring themes that keep popping up throughout Marina Abramović's practice. But I briefly mentioned the performance piece on the Great Wall of China, and I think that's definitely worth us chatting a little bit more about for those that don't know about that piece, because at the time, certainly that was quite revolutionary. And I mean, I think it even would be now, but are you able to tell us more about that and the story behind, you know, that performance piece specifically?
In 1988, she walked the Great Wall of China with Ule, the performance artist who she had been in a relationship with, and they had been a duo performing group for 8 years. But that was their final work together. It wasn't the work that caused the rift, it was the relationship stopped just before actually the performance permissions came from the Chinese authorities. And in 1995, she worked at Modern Oxford and did this amazing trio, really, of video works called Cleaning the Mirror, which was really important works. And a lot of people will have seen the images from those. There's one where she's lying with a skeleton on top of her, human skeleton on top. And as she inhales and exhales, the skeleton moves. And it's incredibly poetic, slightly disturbing. Depending on your reference points, to me, it always draws me into sort of thoughts of Death and the Maiden pictures as well. And there was also this scrubbing, cleaning of the skeleton. In 97, she was invited to exhibit at the Venice Biennale, and it was extremely challenging with the authorities of the National Pavilion she was due to show in, and so she ended up being disallowed from exhibiting within that and instead was given a space in the group show, and so that's in the Italian Pavilion. And a piece that she made there was Balkan Baroque. It is in 97. It's when the Bosnian War is really, you know, kicked off, and she had a pile of bones, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bones, that a lot of the ones, particularly the several hundred on top, were somewhat rotting. And the durational task she'd set herself was to scrub for 4 days solidly, 7 hours a day, to scrub and clean these bones as part of her shame and fury and anger at the political atrocities that were going on in the Balkan states. So it's completely extraordinary, her work. For that, she was awarded the Artist Golden Lion at the Venice Biennale, which put her visibility onto a new plane, which was really important in terms of more people understanding the salience of performance work. And a work that she's well known for now, partly because there's a level of celebrity interest in it, was in 2010 she did a work at MoMA New York called The Artist is Present, where she sat and people could come, and the focus was on the idea of the gaze and just a locked encounter, this intense locked encounter with Marina as a performer. So she's done completely extraordinary projects, and her excitement about this one is that it's so minimal. And I must say, there's a generosity to Abramovich when you hear her talk about her work and the way she does these things. And it really is a very sincere and genuine invitation to take up the space of the performer in a way that's kind of choreographed within the space. And so she wants to draw people into that mode of both calm and presentness that she has mastered and continues to work on.
God, I think just hearing you talk about those works now and kind of almost list them off, it makes you realise just how many works have been so pivotal in Marina Abramovich's practice. And a lot of them have made quite big statements over their time. But I'm interested, obviously you've got this exhibition coming up, but well, it actually opens later this week, which is very exciting. But why is now the right time to host another exhibition with Marina Abramovich when you've already done one at Modern Art Oxford already? What's different now, or what makes this time right for this exhibition?
One of the things that Modern Oxford is really good at, we often exhibit artists who've never had a major exhibition before, major solo show, but it's the right time in their practice, or artists who've never been exhibited in the UK before. And occasionally we work with artists who are very well known, but showing work that's actually different from what they would normally do when that's the right time for them. And so that it's in that spirit that we're doing the exhibition with Marina Abramovich. She obviously has this fantastic survey exhibition coming up with the Royal Academy next year, which is very exciting. And this will be very different because it is, the Oxford show is very different than that. It comes specifically from this residency that she did last summer. It's very site-specific in that way. And the work is very much around the visitor as performer. This is something that's been emerging in her work over the last decade or so, that the feeling and sense that she has, the importance of that really connecting in to an energetic, present mode, that when you're in the right headspace, and let's face it, we're not always in the right headspace when we're in a gallery, so it's going to be different experiences for everyone, right? That actually it really can be quite transformative in, you know, possibly small ways, but feeling that connection can be a big deal as well if you've not had the space and time to do that.
And that's it, isn't it? Taking the time to actually view an exhibition and take it in. And you might react to it completely differently to how the person next to you might. But that's almost the beauty of performance art, though, isn't it? I think the different reactions that people can have. And a lot of people also haven't seen performance art before or haven't realised that they've seen performance art. So I think that's maybe what's quite special.
Utterly, James. Every single person's body and form and mind is so unique to them. And of course, we share the same aspects that put us together. We have the same chemical reactions to emotional triggers. We have, but that doesn't tell us anything about what our feelings turn into, because, you know, our feelings and how we interpret things, how we perceive things, that's utterly individual to us, because that's all shaped by our experience and how our nervous systems react, often in relation to our feelings as well. So that wonderful play, which is just true across all communities and societies, to my mind, which is we're each utterly unique, yet also completely the same in terms of our shared sort of how we're as mammals kind of formed. And so it will be exceedingly different for different people. And she has quite a cult following. So I can imagine people who are used to the Marina Abramović method, as it's now being called, will come because they know what a rare chance it is to spend time following guidance and instruction that comes from Marina Abramović's work and is often about the kind of stillness and spending time really tuning into your own body, the idea that you can then tune into something far more unusual. And it will be exceedingly different for different individuals. And that will be fascinating to learn from for all of us.
Oh, I can't wait to see it now. But are you able to tell us more about the actual exhibition itself and maybe some of the works that are on display and Marina's kind of thought process behind the show and a bit more about what we can maybe expect?
So the exhibition, Marina has titled it Gates and Portals. So for her, what gates and portals describe, and this is very much drawn from different spiritual practices, is those modes and spaces in which you can transition from one mode of consciousness to another, and also spaces where you're actually on another plane of consciousness. So that is her reference point from her time spent Pitt Rivers before, but also building on years and years of her practice around that. The exhibition is timed tickets, and that's because, in good part, it's performative for the visitor. So one thing Marina said is she feels it's from her most radical exhibition to date, because it's the most minimal, in that she's inviting visitors into the space that is usually just for when she works with groups, training them in the Marina Abramović method, when she is doing the performances herself. There's a very small number of different prompts and some different structures. So some of the structures are instructions. Some of the structures are physical structures. She's really paid attention to what the material of the physical structures is made from. The Marina Abramović method itself has three different postures, as she calls it. There's sitting, there's standing, and there's lying down. So you can expect a bit of all of those three. And there is a level of sensory deprivation within the work as well, such as wearing ear defenders to block out sound. She's done that previously before, and it's been really effective. So there's a little bit more than that. I don't want to give too much away, because I think it's so great if people experience it for themselves. And I think one of the works I'm most excited to experience and see how other people experience it is just being finished being made. And I can't talk too much about it, because we just don't want to do any plot spoiler. Essentially, it's in the final room of the gallery. So the gallery is made up of two very large spaces connected by a small intimate space. And it's in the final large space. And I think it would be quite an extraordinary encounter with this very both beautiful and strange object that she's made. So I can't say more than that about why it's one of my favourites, but I haven't even seen it yet either in real life. I've only seen it on video calls. So we'll see. But I think it'll be quite an intriguing experience, and we're anticipating it'll be kind of most people, they'd want to spend about maybe 30, 45 minutes. We'll just see how it unfolds, essentially. And yeah, we're looking forward to seeing how people experience it and experiencing it ourselves as well, at the gallery, the team.
It feels like it's been a long time in the making as well, I bet, for you guys. So to finally see it come together is very exciting. But I think I touched on it just then, but the idea of performance art and people being involved within art is very different, obviously, to a lot of art that people have always known. But hopefully this exhibition will kind of bring performance art to the forefront a little bit more, and you know, really challenge people's perception of art and what actually makes good art as well.
Definitely. And people are art. I mean, one of the things Marina has within her practice is questioning, you know, what is art? What is the relationship of the viewer, the individual, the, you know, in and of itself, in essence, what is art? And that has been a long and deep exploration for her. And this exhibition is very much part of that, and very much with the emphasis on the viewer's own deep engagement, or not in the mood engagement, or finding actually you can kind of get in the zone when you quieten down your system a bit, as in your own kind of physical system. And I think as an exploration as to, you know, why we do what we do, you've got an art podcast, you know, people are listening because they're into art. It's a question that's always worth persistently asking for us as individuals engaging with it, wider in the sector, you know, where are we at? What's this thing we call art? Which aspects of it are of the most value?
It's such a good way to look at it, because art is, at the end of the day, so much more than just paintings on a canvas.
There's many different arts, right, aren't there? Because we say art, but actually we're doing a kind of amazing historical mashup when we say that. You know, it refers to spiritual art, which actually Marina's drawing on, think about mandalas or anything else, you know, lots of spiritual practice where it's time spent moving within. Think about religious buildings being so exquisite aesthetically, whether they're mosques or churches, is related to that aesthetic experience as something that takes us into another plane of encounter and engagement. Then there's, you know, the aspects of art as being an expressive, communicative form, whether that's things such as some of the indigenous Aboriginal works, for example. I know that Marina spent a lot of time with indigenous groups in Australia, and looking at practices where the communicative community forms of pattern and printmaking is really vital as a different way to know the world. So these things come down to all sorts of different ways of knowing the world, essentially different forms of knowledge. But to my mind, one of the really crucial things, as you just said, is what is our emotion? How do we feel when we engage and interact with this stuff? And to my mind, what makes something really an artistic and aesthetic encounter is when you push yourself to think more on that. So you can go, I love this is amazing. Or you can be like, no, not so much. Or, oh God, I find this really difficult to understand. Or I need to spend some more time with this. You know, you have these honest thoughts in your head, right? Whatever they might be about a thing you're encountering. But then it's to pause a bit and to push that. It's called metacognition. It's called aesthetic appreciation in Kant, called metacognition in psychology. But it's ultimately that, okay, and then you pause and reflect. What does that tell you about where you are at? What does that tell you about your experience in the wider world? What does that tell you about their experience in the wider world, the person or persons who's created this thing that you have just had a reaction to? So it's not just a, oh, I love it, in a kind of consumer way, I love it, I want it, it keys into my identity, buy it. It's something to try and kind of push that bit further, with the questioning, so you're able, you know, and I know this isn't everyone's bag, but I think it was a big part of modernism that's got a little left by the wayside. How does that help me develop as a person? What does that tell me? How does, you know, like Marina Abramović is coming from that strong 20th century push there was, that was far more directly engaged with ideas from Buddhism, think of John Cage or others, ideas such as Nam June Paik, in terms of how you have exciting interventions that actually can spark enlightened ideas. You know, these things are coming from many, many different belief systems internationally and from different eras historically, and that we have all of those coursing around our bodies and belief systems is kind of amazing. And to learn a bit more about what that actually, rather than get overwhelmed by that or freaked by the massiveness, there's something as well to beautiful about art, I find, which is just a little bit of a pause and go, but why am I resisting that idea? Or why am I so in love with that idea? And to just unpick things a little bit. And there's not that many pause points in our day-to-day lives, but art is one of them, or it can be.
Definitely. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. But look, Emma, I could talk about this exhibition, I think, all day long. And I think a lot of our listeners will now be very excited to go and see the show opening this Saturday, I believe, the 24th of September through to, I believe, the 5th of March. So plenty of time to go and see it. But look, I'm conscious you've probably got a lot on in the final preparations of the exhibition, so I won't keep you for too much longer. But thank you so much, Emma, for taking the time to chat with us today. It's been fascinating and I think has really made me, I think, specifically consider a little bit more about performance art and why it is so important and its role to play within, I guess, what the wider art industry or everything else that's being produced. So thank you for that, and hopefully we will be in touch soon, and I can't wait to see the exhibition.
Oh, no, it's really great, James. Thanks so much for the invitation. It's really appreciated, and congrats as well on the popularity of your podcast.
Well, thank you very much. But that should just about conclude us for the latest episode of Temporary Admission. If you've liked today's episode, make sure to hit like, subscribe, or follow, whichever is the right one on the platform that you listen on. It really does make a difference to our visibility on each platform, so would really appreciate that. And make sure to tune in next week. With Frieze just around the corner, we'll be chatting with Nathan Clements Gillespie, director of Frieze London and Masters, to find out what's in store for this year and how you can make the most of London's most famous art fair. Until then, stay safe. Speak soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.